So there was all these Facebook pages and Facebook groups with all kinds of crazy, far out, extremist identities. One thing we did, we just wrote to all of them and say, hey, we're coming, we'd like to meet. People wrote back, and it just kind of flowed from there.
According to Matt, the Tunisian government's inability to censor Facebook provided an ideal organizing tool for the large number of unemployed yet educated angry youth, and they are still using social media, but social networks themselves exist outside the internet. The revolution, said Luna, is not on Twitter. Today's communities are focused on fighting authority.
There was a sudden politicization of society. And what I see from the footage and from what people told me about what was happening in Tunisia right now, everybody is speaking about politics, everybody has an opinion. The whole of society, even though it might happen along different ideological or political thoughts, they all seem to adopt the radical anti-power stance.
The Tunisian uprising was the culmination of years of unrest in the small towns and villages of the south, away from the economic and touristic centers, and unreported in the medias.
Small villages with other smaller villages around that have like, I don't know, 30,000 people, and there was like 20,000 people fighting the police on the street. So it was everybody, young and old, men and women. And those people started marching towards Tunis, and somehow the civil society of Tunis, people who went to college, joined the protests, and that made the revolution. You have like 80-something political parties that seem they don't have like a really strong connection to this whole civil movement that just happened in the street.
The sudden eruption of popular anger with little ideological alignment took everyone by surprise. The corrupt regime of Ben Ali fell within a month, and according to Oriane, a political vacuum has since settled in many parts of the country.
There's a lot of states inside the states. The leader of the government don't control the police, and the chief of the police have been evicted, but the majority of the police is still the same. You cannot change an institution from a day to another one. If the police is not come back there, it's because the government don't want the police to come back there, because they don't trust the police. It's not because they want that the people of this village stay there and self-manage their village.
This lack of resolution is unsettling to Nate, a seasoned Occupy activist, who sees the cities and tourist centers has been led through an uneasy transition toward Western-style political institutions, while the rural South and West cling to a deep distrust of any type of state power.
While we could identify certain traits like fighting the police or evicting the state party 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, they evicted this Islamist party from the town. But nobody in the town itself wanted to identify as leftists or anarchists. There's this total disinterest with regard to, you know, geopolitical issues.
Yet, the South is relying on much older traditions of popular rebellion, which Matt says may inspire more radical tactics among the Occupy activists elsewhere.
Someone told us that one of the first moments they recognized that this was something is when they recognized that the police were afraid and that they hadn't experienced that before. Occupy Wall Street initially focused more on the economy, but the police kicked the of Occupy all over the country, so it can't just be about banks.
For the WBAI Sunday News, this is Fred Nguyen.